5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I thought I'd talk about something which is quite topical. Things have been blowing up this week in the UK. It would be nice, wouldn't it, if we could have some decent, competent governments in the UK, and we certainly haven't had that for very many years, and we definitely, most definitely don't have it now. Now, I was, as we all were at the Lotus Eaters, rather keen to get rid of the Tories at the last election because they had betrayed us on so many fronts. The massive levels of taxation, the astonishingly huge amount of mass immigration, which they, and I'm not talking about the people on the boats, that's small fry, I'm talking about the legal migration. They just shipped people in with no particular skills to put them on welfare. An astonishing betrayal, and the taxes, and the COVID, they did have to go. But we were certainly under no illusions that Labour would be any better, and they are demonstrating that quite ably at the moment by taking the low standards that the Tories left for them and managing to be significantly worse than them. Now, spending has been far too high for far too long. I told this story on the podcast last week, but you know, prior to COVID, I was looking at the financial situation, and I wasn't a podcaster or anything at that time. I was just a general chap on the street who knew a little bit about this stuff, and I was thinking they've got to get a handle on this soon, because basically things weren't necessarily that great before 2008. But after 2008, great financial crisis, everything began to spiral and get significantly worse. We had David Cameron come in not too long after that, and he was talking about doing austerity, cutting public sector spending. And contrary to the hype, they never did it. And I remember having this argument with a new government minister that I knew. And I was saying, you appreciate that they're not actually cutting any government spending. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm having to make cuts all the time in my department. I said, no. What's happening is the actual amount of spending is going up. It's simply going up slightly less than the rate of inflation, which means that you're having to reprioritize within your department. And he didn't believe me. And we went over to the House of Commons Library and dug out a copy of the budget. And he was shocked to discover that, yes, in fact, government spending never ceased going up. It was just going up by a little bit less than they planned it to, which is described as a cut in our system. So, David Cameron's government, they never cut. Theresa May, got bogged down in trying to get out of Europe, which she clearly didn't want to, and ended up committing us to vast sums going to them when we could have recharted a new course. Boris Johnson was a epic disaster. Certainly our worst prime minister in the last 50 years, with the mass immigration and the COVID, and he's up against some tough competition for that. He had no clue when it came to spending or anything like that. Liz Truss was probably the best of the bunch, and we get into some comparisons of her against, because a lot of people are comparing this current UK situation to what she did. There are some comparisons that are worth making on that front, and we will cover that. And then Rishi Sunak, who was just, maybe he was okay on the finances, difficult to tell, he wasn't in for that long, but he was certainly politically inept, and he had to go. But since we've had Labour, they've behaved in a way that is so completely disconnected from reality. At least with the Tories, they did the wrong thing reasonably competently. Whereas Labour are doing the wrong thing incompetently. And, I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, essentially what it is, I'll explain exactly what it is. Exactly what it is Labour have been looking at the way the US operates. They looked at the way the Biden government was, with its big deficits, so spending more than it earns, and its big social programmes. And Labour thought, well, if Joe Biden can do it, we can do it too. And what they are discovering is that the UK cannot do what the US does. And the simple reason for that is that the US has the dollar, and the dollar is the global reserve currency, meaning that people always need dollars. They always want dollars to settle international trade, make international investments, buy oil, that kind of stuff. So when Janet Yellen, their version of our chancellor, more or less, when she gets a bit ambitious and spends too much, she can just get in touch with Jerome Powell at the Fed and say, look, I've got a problem with my screen. Can you fix it on one of your screens? And he could just magic up some extra dollars, and people will want those dollars because people want dollars for the reasons that, you know, we've already got into that international demand, global currency reserve. The UK cannot do that. I mean, yes, foreign nations and corporations will hold a certain amount of pounds, but there's nowhere near the demand that there is for dollars. And if you run Biden-level insanity without the dollar backing you up, you're going to get called out significantly sooner. And that's essentially what's happened. So over the past week, at the point of recording, UK bond rates have risen to their highest level in 26 years. You have to go back to the Asian financial crisis to find a time when bond rates were higher than they are now. Quick point on this, it gets a little bit confusing with bond rates. When I say bond rates have gone up, what we mean by that is that the price of the bonds themselves has fallen. So basic economics, things that people want go up in price, and things that people don't want tend to fall in price because there's no demand for them. With bonds, they also pay out an annual coupon. So if the price of the actual thing is falling, then the yield on it is going up. You know, if I'm a UK government and I'm issuing £100 bond and it pays a £5 coupon a year, the price of the bond goes up to £110 because everybody wants to buy my bonds. Not the situation we're in, but if price goes up to 110, then, you know, my yield that I'm having to pay out, and I'm getting £110 in and only having to pay out £5. So my yield has gone down to about 4.5%. But if it goes the other way, if nobody wants my bonds and I can only sell them for £90 per £5 a coupon, well, now my rate, my yield on this has gone up to 5.5%. So yields going up is bad. And we tend to talk about bonds in those terms, which can be a little bit confusing because you might think, okay, bonds going up, that's a good thing. No, it's not. It's the rates that we're talking about that are going up. So to map this out, what happened is last Tuesday, so that should be 2 weeks before you watch this because I tend to record these a week in advance. And you know, you can tell me in the comments if things got significantly worse in the week between recording and this going out. I don't think it will. I think what's going to happen is this situation is bad, but it's not acutely bad enough to blow up immediately. It's bad enough to make us poorer, and it's bad enough for the train to stay on the track. What you kind of want is something else. You either want the situation to improve or to get bad so quickly that the government is forced to capitulate or be thrown out, and if it does capitulate, but it manages to stay in, that it slashes spending across the board, all that kind of stuff, and that's probably not going to be the situation. So I don't feel too bad about recording this a little bit in advance. But 2 weeks ago, from your point of view, what happened is the government issued some 30-year debt, 30-year bonds, and it did that at a rate of about 5.2%, which is already very high. Because there had been that slow loss in confidence of the Labour government throughout their term. And in the days following, you saw it go up, you know, first 20, then 30 basis points, which is, you know, 0.3. And you might think, okay, well, that's not necessarily a huge amount. Actually, yeah, for bonds it is. That is a large amount. For every percentage point that UK bonds go up, it costs the UK government about 30 billion, over the course of the whole duration of the debt. So borrowing costs have soared. Comparisons to the Liz Truss mini budget, which I will come back to, have abounded. But this is a serious loss of confidence in the UK, and that's why it's worth covering. Because it's not just that people are saying, no, I don't want to buy those government bonds, and therefore the rates have risen. It is more than that. It is a wholesale rejection of investing in Britain. And you can see that because the pound has also fallen. And normally it doesn't work like that. Normally, if the UK government gilts are bonds, we call them gilts for whatever reason, UK government bonds get called gilts. Normally, if a government's bonds, the rate of them going up, well, that makes those bonds more attractive to investors because, of course, you can get a higher rate on them. And so what should happen in that situation is that money flows into the UK, the pound goes up, and that compensates for it. And then some of those bonds get bought at the higher rate. But what's actually happening is that people are just saying, no, I want no part of the UK. I don't want the bonds, but also I don't want any of the other assets, mainly stocks, but, you know, whatever commodities we still produce, whatever assets that we might have. The world is basically saying, oh, I'm done with the UK. I want to get out of there. And that makes it alarming. It means that the UK is running out of road. And the government, even though they've only been in office for a few months and they've completely fouled up on the response to the Southport murders, they made a complete mess of the grooming gangs scandal. They've also, they're running us into the financial ground. I'll get into more detail on all of those, but yeah, it's not good. A lot of criticism has come down on Rachel Reeves. A lot of us derisively call her Rachel from Accounts because that's basically the caliber of the woman. She should be a low-level functionary. She should not be Chancellor of the UK. Her budget, which is where this all really kicked off in October, she went after employment taxes. So she'd said before the election that she wasn't going to raise taxes on employment. She immediately did. Only thing is that the way she did it was by raising employers' tax on employing people, which doesn't directly hit the employees on day one. So they thought they were being very clever because nobody would see the tax line in their pay slip go up. But because it's more costly to employ people, basically she just robbed them of their next pay rise. Or she made it more likely that they're going to be replaced by AI or automation or something like that. I'll come back to the response that this is having in the industry, but basically people are not hiring anymore. She left the last budget with a financial headroom, as they call it, of about 10 billion, which is not much for a country the size of the UK to have a 10 billion headroom in your budget. But all of that has almost certainly gone at this point. She probably has no headroom. All she does, it's going to be 1 billion. Now, that's an issue because you do actually have your day-to-day expenses. You know, you've got a large workforce working for the government that need to be paid, and other contracts that need to be serviced, other cash flows that need to go out. So either you're going to have to pay these much higher bond rates, and they're still climbing as, you know, day by day, or you need to bring in some emergency cuts, or you find another route. And you just sort of magic the money out of the air. Not going to spoil it, but you can probably guess that's more or less what she's going to do. Rachel herself is, as we talked about, incompetent. Doesn't necessarily mean that she's not the best qualified of the people that could have been picked, because, of course, she can only pick from Labour MPs. But she is incompetent. She lied on her CV about her background. She put herself forward as trained economist who served that function in the Bank of England and private industry, and that simply isn't true. She was a low-level functionary at the Bank of England. She managed complaints for a bank, and they eventually sacked her because she was basically skiving off work all the time to do Labour Party activism. So they got rid of her. She plagiarised for a book. She's had her credit card suspended. It's disappointing, really, because you like to go through life thinking that the people in government are at least as competent as you are, preferably significantly more competent, if they've risen to such a great office. And we've got somebody here. I mean, I'm not bragging. I could easily do a better job than Rachel Reeves. Not even close. I could easily do a better job than her. So she got into this pickle. Her response was, instead of, okay, spending is out of control, we're going to rein it in. You know, we're not going to have all of these immigrants, because 60% of London social housing is occupied by people who weren't born here. We just ship people in, put them in housing and give them benefits. It's enormously expensive. We can't afford it. Some of the other welfare changes that she made, I mean, on day one, they came in and gave huge pay rises to the workers in the NHS. You know, we can't afford the existing NHS bill, let alone, you know, these additional wages. But they felt they had to do it because the NHS is an unworkable model and too many people were leaving to, you know, doctors would commonly go and work in Australia instead where they can earn more. That's because the underlying model is wrong. But anyway, so they didn't want to cut taxes. Sorry, they didn't want to cut spending. And so her solution over the weekend was, okay, well, people, we've taxed them to limit. What are we going to do? And her solution was, well, we're going to put a tax on hotels. And the logic here is because nobody can afford to go abroad anymore for their holiday, and people having holidays in the UK, well, we're just tax hotels in the UK and that will give us some extra tax. So you can't even afford to do that anymore. And the market response on Monday morning open was, again, yields up, sterling down. So she basically has no good choices from her point of view. I mean, from my point of view, it'd be very easy because I think that cutting from UK government spending is a very target-rich environment. It'd be very easy to do. But these people are ideologically possessed that state spending is good and all of it is necessary. And so she feels trapped. She feels that there's nothing that they can do. And again, I'm going to spoil it, my conclusion, but they're just going to have to print money, which is dangerous considering the inflationary environment that we're in. So you'll probably be hearing in the news, especially if you're in the UK, that bond vigilantes are back. They're trying to make it sound like it's just this speculative attack on poor old Rachel from accounts, first female chancellor, therefore she must be good. Awful bond vigilantes. The problem is, it's not just a global phenomenon. It's not just something that happened. Yes, yields are rising around the world because basically the Western world all has this problem where they spend more than they earn and they don't want to get a grip to it. They don't want to change the social model. They don't want to change the model of government. So they've all had this. But if it was purely a global situation and not a particular UK situation, you wouldn't be seeing the UK getting to its highest relative rates against any sort of chosen comparable. Now, you wouldn't be seeing UK rates at their highest since 1998, the Asian financial crisis, if it was purely global. This is a particular sickness within the UK. It is a particular effect of Labour policy. And you've got to remember that these rising yields, they don't just affect government borrowing costs. I've already talked about the extra, you know, billions that the UK government will be spending, but it trickles into corporate costs, again, affecting growth and employment, and it trickles into UK mortgages. So if you've got a UK mortgage, certainly for a while, unless they come back with some big monetary response, your mortgage costs are going to go up. You're going to be a lot of people in the UK whose mortgages will go up by £500 a month in an environment where business isn't growing because business growth has been choked off, where they're not getting their pay rises, where inflation is pushing up their bill, and on top of that, their mortgage could be going up £500 a month or more. So, you know, what a complete mess. So they're trading at their highest level for 26 years. It's seriously bad news for the UK because their entire plan is that we are going to borrow more money from the bond market to pay for all this state spending that we feel that we need. And actually, taxes has topped out as well. You look at UK tax take as a percentage of national income, it never gets above about the mid-30s. Whole combinations of different governments and tax rates have been tried in the post-war period. None of them ever get above the mid-30s as a total proportion of tax taken. And we are at the upper limit now. If you try and tax beyond this point, what people do is they just think, sod it. I'll work less hours or I'll leave the country. Huge numbers of wealthy Brits have been leaving the country because they just don't see any point in continuing anymore. So more of them will go. And again, that you can keep turning up those taxes. You'll just increase the rate which people leave. Or you increase the rate at which people think, you know, whatever, I'll just make do with less. I won't buy a new car. I won't do this. I won't go on holiday because that my hotel was being taxed now, even in the UK. So I'll just cut back on all those things that I otherwise would have done. Growth is dropping. And I'll just work less. I won't take that extra shift. You know, I won't take that promotion, which is a little bit more money, but a lot more headache. You know, I'll just stop out of this process. And that is almost certainly the level that we are now. Quick define on our terms. Gilts, basically just UK government bonds. It's a government IOU to the government. They sell them to investors. Investors give them money. They use that money to spend more than they earn. The yield or the coupon is the price that the government pays out every year on that. And that's a fixed amount, which is why the price of it moves around. And bond vigilante is somebody who is, it's one of those sort of made up terms that they use in the media, somebody who will attack governments. It's not really true. What's really happening there is that there are people who are looking for things that gives them a return. And if the deal is unattractive, they simply walk away from that deal. Bond vigilante is not a term I like at all, but you know, you see it a lot in the media. What's the big picture? How do we get here? So think back to the pre-2008 era, because 2008 was a pivotal moment in this. You know, you go back to, you know, the mid-70s, government debt was about 50 billion. By 2008, that had gone up tenfold. It was about 550 billion, 11-fold. Now, that was high. That looked like we had a bit of a problem then, but it was nothing compared to what comes next. After 2008, that 550 billion goes to 1.8 trillion. A massive increase. 2008 was a real milestone. I often say that the great reset has already happened. It happened in 2008. So debt spiraled up to 1.8 trillion, and then in just a few years after that, by 2020, beginning of the COVID era, you got that debt level of 1.8 trillion. Astonishing amount of money. And beyond that, that spiraled up by another trillion on top. So we're now sat just below 3 trillion. And we know where the Labour budget is going to take us. It's going to take us to north 3.5 trillion in debt. At just below 3 trillion, that's basically 100% of GDP. So both debt and GDP are at the same level. It does make the maths easier because at that point, it's a simple question. What is growing more? Well, the debt is very easy to work out how much that's growing. It's growing by the rate on the debt, the thing that we've been talking about. It's growing by the coupon, which is on 30-year debt now well north of 5.5%. On 10-year debt, it's about 5%. So, you know, over here, this thing measured at 100% is growing at 5%. But the economy, what level is that growing at? Because if it's not 5%, then that means this thing is just going to eat the other thing. This thing is going to get smaller while this thing gets smaller. If the rate of this is going is not beaten by the level this is going. And it's not. GDP growth is basically non-existent. It's negligible.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.